Welcome to the Short Term Show, the show about short-term rentals and long-term wealth, with real property owners hosting real properties who are crushing it in the vacation and short-term rental space. And here's your host, Avery Carl.
Hey, all. Welcome to another episode of the Short Term Show. Today, I have a cool new data company, or they're not new, but they're kind of new to me. One of my favorites now. Anyway, cool data company called Revity that I want to introduce you to. And we have their CEO and founder, Colin Carvey, here to talk to us about that. How's it going, Colin?
Hey, great. Thank you, Avery. Thanks for having us.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on. So why don't you start off by just telling us a little bit about you and Revity and how you guys got started?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So it's best to know a little bit about my background. So I was in financial services for way too long, banging my head against the corporate wall, doing what I called highly funded entrepreneurial work, but really focused on data and analytics, companies like Capital One and TransUnion and HSBC. And I left that and started working for Vacasa and helped grow that into the largest property management company. Some days I'm proud, some days I'm not, but let's go with proud today. Had an amazing team and really had a good time. But one of the things I discovered while I was at Vacasa is that short-term rentals are an asset class that is very under-recognized by investment world. And really saw an opportunity there for us to look at that and help that become what it should be, which in my mind is truly an investment asset class that people can put their money into and get returns and get pretty good returns. It's really interesting because, you know, when you look at short-term rentals, they have the cash flow and some of the reflections of hospitality, but they also are a real estate asset that has many different exits that you can use and leverage, whether you want to exit that as a single family home or as a short-term rental business, right? You have options. Long-term rent can also be an option for it. So I was very excited about that space. So when I left Vacasa, it was really to go figure that out and how do we try and solve that problem? And one of the things we came across was data. And this data in this space is tough. And it's not as, there's not as good a hygiene, I would call it, as one would expect when you're thinking about an investment asset class. And so that's really why we started Revity, was to figure out some of those problems. And again, we focused initially really on understanding the data that was there and building that data up so that folks could make better decisions with better data.
All right. So I have a lot of questions about this. All right. So I guess let's talk about what is the data problem in short-term rental, which I think we all kind of know what that is, but let's talk about it. And then how are you guys working to solve that?
Yeah. So one of the biggest problems is just how do you get the data, right? Like Airbnb itself isn't going to share it. VRBO is not going to share it to some degree, right? Like it's tough to get to. And so what ends up happening is you have these scrapers out there that are scraping the data. Now, when you scrape the data, they have to make all kinds of assumptions because they're scraping data and they're not getting everything. They're not getting direct bookings, for example, right? And so they're making assumptions when they have gaps on the calendar. Is it a owner block? Is it a time for repair? Or did it get booked at another site, right? So they're having to make assumptions through that process. And those assumptions are what causes problems with some of the data. In addition to that, this space is so bifurcated. There's so many different elements to this space, i.e. self-manager's performance can be much different from another manager's performance. Like the manager itself makes a huge difference. The asset can make a difference. The market can make a difference. You have all these different things that can mess with the data. And what happens with the tools is you end up averaging them out because that's what you have to do. You got to make assumptions and then you got to average them out. And the combination of those two things makes it very difficult to get to a point where I'm looking at a single asset and trying to project out what that asset will make. Because again, you're making assumptions and you're using averages. The example I love to use here, Avery, like is Motel 6 against a Ritz-Carlton. They're both one bedrooms. And you can average them together and be right. The average of those two is, let's call it $200, when in actuality, the Motel 6 is $79 and the Ritz-Carlton, now I'm going to mess up my math, is like $800. You get the point, though.
Yeah.
It averages out. And that is what happens in this space quite frequently with the data.
Yeah. I see that so much because a one bedroom is not a one bedroom across the board. It really depends on the property itself. That's why we have, why we started using what we call the enemy method at the short-term shop, because we saw this in the data. We're not data people. We don't know how to fix that from a data perspective, but you can get on the platforms and look at the properties around you that the big data companies are using to give you averages and say, oh, well, you know, this one bedroom, the paint's fallen off, there's a hole in the roof, the windows are broken, it looks like crap. So that's probably renting for a lot less than this one over here. That's really, really nice, totally updated, great experience. And those two should not be being averaged together. They should be separated.
This episode is brought to you by the Premier Short-Term Rental Facebook group. Short-term rental, long-term wealth. We have nearly 50,000 members, and this is the biggest independently owned and operated SCR Facebook group, and it has been curated by yours truly, Cashflow Carl. Join us on Facebook. Search the groups for short-term rental, long-term wealth. That's short-term rental, long-term wealth on Facebook.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And so that's how we've looked at the problem and how we've been trying to solve for it, right? Which is not just using scrape data, because that's, we do use scrape data. We do what we call right-sided. So we look at it. We don't make a bunch of assumptions. If a house has 3 months of data on it, for example, we don't try and extrapolate it to 12. We get rid of it.
Yeah, that's so dangerous too, because people, like, if you're looking at 3 months of high season and then you try to say, you're going to do that 12 months out of the year, you're going to have a wildly high number. And same thing, like if you're looking at 3 months of low season, what looks like every property in that market is going to just suck. But you're looking at low season data and you can't just say, that's one of the biggest mistakes that I see investors make is they look at, okay, well, a property that I'm looking at made this much this month, so let me multiply that times 12. And that's just not how it works with seasonality.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's what in some of the long-term rental guys, you can do that, right? They're used to doing that, but you definitely can't do that in this space because of the seasonality. And even if you're sophisticated enough to use seasonality curves, the seasonality curves are again using averages. So again, that can mess you up even if you use the seasonality curves to try and forecast that out. So that's why we think it's super important to really underwrite these assets at that asset level and evaluate that. And so we've built tools to let you do that, including ability to kind of select your comps in and out that affect where that estimate comes in at. Because, you know, the AI engines aren't the smartest. We like to think of computers as being super smart. They aren't always. They do what we tell them to do. And if we don't feed them the right information, then they have a hard time doing what we tell them to do. So we spend a lot of time on that. And then we also have a large set of actuals, because I think it's the other misnomer in this space is that actuals are truth. So we like to have actuals. It gives you a good indication, but it's the same thing, right? Like an asset, literally, we've had assets that perform, same asset, not redesigned. All they did was change managers and it performed by 50% better. Like it's incredible. Right. And so you have to also be careful with the actuals because, yeah, it's probably downside protection, but you got to be able to match what that current manager is doing or you're going to be off and you're going to miss some houses as well if you don't look at that way. So I think the actual piece is very important to us. And we gather those ourselves. So we gather it from everything from self-managers all the way up the chain to, you know, some of the top tier managers like AvantStay or Heirloom and those guys. So we try and really look at the full spectrum just again to get a better idea of the data because we're a little bit of data geeks over here. So
no way.
Thanks, Avery.
So what do you think? I guess without making this sound like an abrasive question or like something to spark any debate here. What do you think is the biggest difference, biggest positive difference between the other data companies out there and you guys?
Yeah. I mean, the biggest difference is we use multiple data sources. So that's a huge piece of it. And then we've underwritten $50 billion of assets.
Okay. So let's stop there because I'm going to forget my question if I let you keep going. So $50 billion in assets. So what is that look like? Like who's not who, like not naming names, but like, you know, what kinds of investors are you analyzing this stuff for? Because that's a lot of analysis.
Yeah, it's a ton. And my team tells me that all the time because they've worked their butt off to get there. So we work with folks like family offices and even with Marriott, for example, on their development side, looking and helping them do what's called feasibility studies. So looking at the data and helping developers decide what to build, is a market receptive to short-term rentals? And if so, how many, right? To really understand it. So our analysis has been across the board. So including developments like that. And that has created more sophistication for us because our understanding of that large of a development that Marriott would do, call it, you know, a stack of 50 with, you know, 200 doors, you really got to dive deep into the market. And that's helped us not just from the perspective of short-term rental projections, but also in better understanding market supply and demand equations at really, again, down to the asset level. And I think that's one of the key pieces that really differentiates us is getting down to that asset level. For example, on our tool, right, the ability to select in and out comps yourself, we still limit that based on what we believe could be comps to make sure that you're not putting a two bedroom, home against a 10 bedroom home. That's not okay. Right. And we protect that data component too. So for us, it's really the differentiation of understanding individual assets and thinking about it that way. And that just comes from underwriting $50 billion and experience in doing that. You better understand the data if you're going through that much work. So,
yeah. And to be working for brands like Marriott and then like family offices who have a ton of money, who are going to want to see some really thorough analysis and numbers, that I think speaks a lot to the integrity of the data and analysis that you guys do. Like you're not some guy sitting in his mom's basement doing this.
Nope. My mom sometimes wishes I was in her basement, but that's a different conversation for a different day.
Yeah, there's a house for sale next to my parents. And my mom's like, you know, it's huge. It's big enough. Like, no, thank you.
My mom is my favorite person in my life, too. So I don't know. I ain't going to live in her basement.
So I guess let's talk about, I want to hear about like maybe some market trends that you've seen over the last few years, especially since COVID. I want to talk about the word saturation and the Airbnb bust. And everybody's like, that you can't make money in short-term rentals anymore. And so when I hear the word saturation, as somebody who's been in this since 2015, what I hear when people say that is I'm not willing to do the work to adapt to the market changes. But I'd like to hear from a data perspective what you guys see in terms of the way the market has shifted since before COVID.
Yeah, so I like to talk about this, and I'm going to use my word again that I like very much, which is bifurcation. So there has been saturation from the perspective of a bunch of people coming in that don't know what the hell they're doing, that wanted to try and capitalize on basically COVID, right? Because it generated this huge shift from hotel stays into short-term rentals. What's interesting is if you look at the data, demand, and you can see this through all the data sources, not just us, demand has increased, right? So demand for this asset and the shift from people wanting to stay in a hotel to people wanting to stay in a house that, by the way, on average costs cheaper and gives you a kitchen and gives you a living room and gives you more room, right? Better experience and less money, like seems like a no-brainer to me. But we saw a lot of people shift and people try and capitalize on that. And so you actually had this saturation come in where people were doing that, but it was these people that didn't know what they were doing, to be perfectly blunt with
right.
you.
Right, yeah, we've seen that too, for sure.
Yeah. And so we looked at the data and we looked at it from what we call investment grade. So looking at assets that are leveraged as investments, right? As best we can define it. And bifurcated the data between that and folks who are not, who we felt were kind of doing it off the side of their desk, who maybe managed one, maybe it was a bedroom, maybe. And the trends were completely different. Meaning, and even to this day, you're seeing decline in some markets and flattening at a minimum on that segment, on the segment that doesn't know what they're doing, while you're seeing the investment grade assets, these assets that are being leveraged as what I would call hospitality assets, actually increasing. So revenue is increasing, occupancy is increasing. So the exact opposite trend, and they're headed in different directions. And the data shows this widening gap between those two, which, you know, even before we looked at the data, I believed, because you could feel it.
Yeah,
you could see the consumer, the guest, wanting more predictability out of SDRs. They didn't want to show up and have underwear hanging out of the drawer, right?
Yeah. And so anecdotally, just a coincidence, pure coincidence, that this morning I was working on a post about this, about my personal properties and looking at, because we still own the ones that we bought from before there was data, when you really just had to say, okay, this property is really attractive to renters. I can afford this property. I'm going to make this one as much like that one as I can. And we've never sold those. So, and they've done really well. But what I was looking at was what we made in the year 2016.
Yeah.
On both of those properties, which they were both one bedrooms with lofts, and it was about $45,000 each. And then in 2023, what we made, so, you know, we went up the COVID curve and we're back down the other side. And so it went from 45 to 80. So we're on this other side of the COVID boom that everybody's calling bust and saturation and blah, blah. And yes, there are 10 times the number of rentals that there were when we started, at least, you know, in what's able to be recorded, because I think there was a lot that existed back then that just wasn't on AirDNA.
Sure.
I mean, wasn't on Airbnb to be able to be scraped. But for all intents and purposes, 10 times the amount, but we're doing almost double what we did back then when there were less. So I like to think of us as being, you know, top tier managers. And but I think our numbers have shown that. And I've definitely stayed, like a couple years ago, we stayed in a place in Pagosa Springs and it looked fine. And then we got in there and it was like, they live there, but they just move out when people are renting, and nowhere in the description did it say that. And so I'm like, oh, cool. There's like all their stuff in the closet. And I have little kids that I, you know, of course I'm watching them, but now I have to worry about people's stuff being here. And there's was a drawer in the refrigerator that had all their half used condiments that said, do not touch. These are our condiments. And I posted that on Facebook and it sparked a gigantic discussion about what the proper brand of ranch dressing is. Interesting to know. I'm not a big ranch person, more of a honey mustard person myself, but it sparked that discussion. But I'm like, oh my God, this is disgusting. And I would never dream of touching your half used condiments because that's kind of foul. But two, for you to like have stuff around, it's just not, you know, you do want to give that hotel hospitality experience. And this was not that. And I was totally grossed out. So I can see how the numbers on a property like that are going to keep going down, because when you do have that predictable, clean, comfortable hospitality experience versus, oh, this person was here like 30 minutes before I left and all their crap is here and this feels weird and uncomfortable.
Yeah. And Avery, this is happening even before there's brands, right? Like in the hotel space, you have brands, you have Hilton, you have Hyatt, you have whatever, right? Like all the things that you know is predictable. And even within those brands, you have segments of those brands, right?
Right.
JW, all that stuff, right? So I think this space, it's just going to keep having that, what I call that bifurcation happen. I think eventually, I mean, Chesky likes the, you know, mom greeting you at the door with her curlers in her hair and her cigarette in her hand, right? He likes that experience of interacting with the host. I don't think everybody does. I know I don't. I want to go. I want to know what I'm getting. I'm freaking, if you have the paddle boards in the garage, that's even better, right? You can give me this experience. I'll pay extra for that all day long. All day long. And that's going to happen. And brands will come into this space. I think that's what's exciting about investing now, is you're getting in before that happens, which means you're getting in before all the value is realized and you get to create that value. And when you create value in an asset, you get paid. Like that's the benefits of that. So I get super excited about this space from the timing of it and the fact that we're ahead of this true bifurcation and ahead of this really being professionalized to the degree of hospitality. But that's going to happen. It's on that path. And I think that's super exciting.
Are you having trouble trying to decide which market to buy in? no problem. That's just one of the many live sessions we offer in Short-Term Shop Plus. Everything you need to know about buying and managing short-term rentals from anywhere in the world, right at your fingertips. You'll also get early access to our world-famous Management Monday sessions, live each and every Monday. Don't delay. Turbocharge your generational wealth today. Join us at stsplus.com or stsconsultation.com for a live call with more info on Short-Term Shop Plus. This episode of the Short-Term Show has been brought to you by your friendly Short-Term Shop real estate agent. We are hyper-local and totally dedicated to your success. Whether you want to buy your next short-term rental or sell the one you currently own, we would be honored to earn your business. We are in all of the best vacation markets in America. Find us at theshorttermshop.com. That's theshorttermshop.com. Brokered by EXP.
Yeah, and I think, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, when are the big funds going to get in? When are the big funds going to get in? And I think I learned this from you, actually, that, you know, they're waiting to get in, but there's not a big enough portfolio out there for them to buy yet for it to make sense for them. And they don't want to buy one here and one there and one here and one there and piecemeal a portfolio together. They want to just buy one big one. Is that right?
Absolutely right. I mean, we were actually told by one of the large ones that they would buy a $100 million portfolio if it existed, right? So they it just doesn't exist, right? You don't have this 100 million. Now they need like 3 years of history as well. So it's not just about the scale. So they need to buy at scale. That's what these large institutions do. They like to buy at scale, but they also need to de-risk. So they need existing rental history, right? So they're looking for 3 years of rental history. $100 million portfolio with 3 years of rental history just isn't there. There's some folks that are starting to build that up. But what we're trying to do is help the space get there. And that starts with individuals who are buying two or three and rolling that into five and then rolling that into 10 and then taking that to 20 and then family offices buying it and doing 25 million. You can stair step. And that's really where we're at in the cycle, is folks in that early stage. And by the way, everybody wins in those jumps, right? Every time that happens. So institutions are a few years out at best, probably a little bit longer, just because we have to build this space up to get them comfortable on both from a risk perspective. What's interesting, Avery, in that space, and I think you know this because of some of your other business, is lending is starting to pick up in this space. And that's a really good sign, because that enables this consolidation to start happening. And I think that's really key to where things are, and a good sign that lenders are starting to once again enter into this space and be able to lend on it.
Yeah, and I think that a really big turning point in this asset class is going to be when commercial lenders start treating these as commercial assets, because then we don't have to worry about, oh, well, yeah, this house has made $500,000 this year, but it's still only worth the same amount as the residential house that sold next door that was not an investment property at all.
Yeah.
So right now, your values are kind of like artificially weighed down by residential sold comps. And if banks start looking at these as true commercial properties, which they are, many hotels, then your value is now based on how much you can make that property make. So if you buy a property that's making 20 grand a year and you manage it well and get it up to 100 a year, then your value on that property has jumped up a lot too. And that will be like what separates the men from the boys, so to speak, which is a terrible phrase, but that's the one I'm going to use.
It's terrible. Coming from you, Avery. Yeah, to emphasize that too, we've started to see that. Our underwrites have been able to save a couple large deals on the lending side, because we're able to show, here's what the business looks like, right? And what the value looks like. It's early days, but lenders are starting to use that. I think that's super important, because that will start to elevate that value of the asset and see it as what it is, which is a business on top of a physical asset. That's also what's great about the space, but lenders just haven't recognized it fully yet.
So I notice on Revity's underwrite, speaking of that, you got something on there called an air appraisal, which is that, right?
That is exactly right. What we're taking is basically looking at the cash flow of the business and calculating what the value of that cash flow is, and then adding that on top of the value of the asset. What's interesting in our underwrites, it can actually be negative because the business loses money. So an error appraisal could actually be lower than the value of the asset because the business is worth negative dollars, right? Which is interesting. Just shows you the truth that we try and provide within our underwrites. Because for us, it's all about the data, right? It's all about the information and making sure we're as accurate as possible. But really, it is, what is the value of the business and what is the value of the asset? And we add those together to give you what we call our error appraisal.
That's pretty
cool.
Again,
that's to help appraisers, right? The other reason why it's called error appraisal is to help appraisers try and understand this as a business, as like, hey, you can appraise this higher because it's worth more than just the house itself. And I think that getting folks to start to understand that is super important for this space.
Yeah. I totally agree with that. And so I've used a few and posted a few of y'all's underwrites recently when I've just been posting our listings on social media, like here's an underwrite from Revity on what this could make. And what I really like about the Revity ones is that they give you a range, which I think is really helpful because a lot of people are like, oh, it should make this dollar and this amount of cents. And if I don't make, and they get like real bent out of shape if they don't hit exactly that, but they might not be managing it as well. It all, again, most of the data out there now comes from averages. And if they're, you know, any amount of standard deviations away from that, they get upset. So I like that there's a range because it's like, well, if you don't do a great job managing it, you might hit this, but if you really knock it out of the park, it could go up to here, which I think will help a lot of investors in terms of being conservative, which is most important, but also seeing the potential, which is also important. But I think sometimes people get too anchored to either the high-end potential or the low-end potential, and they forget about the other side of it.
I agree with that. Avery, you manage short-term rentals yourself, right? You have some yourself. Yeah. They've made the same amount every single year, exactly the same amount to the penny, right?
Yes, dollars and cents, same.
That's right. No.
Yeah, it's different every year, of course.
Every year. Especially in the COVID year.
Yeah.
Did you have a good year? The first year of COVID, there's always mixed. I always get mixed responses. Was that a decent year for you or a bad year? Was it down?
Oh, it was a great year. It was a great year. Yeah. So, I mean, we were in the type of market, though, that people were running to. So all of ours are in regional drivable vacation markets. So, yeah, because people wanted to get out of their houses, but they didn't want to get on planes and get breathed on. But so they would drive, rent a short-term rental, not a hotel. So I think, you know, places that are more of a fly-to vacation, like Hawaii or like Jackson Hole, those are places that got hit, or like metro areas where people were trying to stay away from other people. I think they had the opposite of experience that we did, but ours did great.
Yeah, like, okay. Yeah. I mean, the urban markets took a big hit on that, right? Because everybody's like, we're out of the city. We ain't staying here.
Yeah. And this is one other thing I wanted to ask you, kind of general, but probably should have asked you beforehand. So I'm going to put you on the spot. So markets where there's a lot of hotels to compete with. So say, let's say like metro markets versus vacation markets in terms of vacation rentals, which one do you see, which type do you see being the best option? So for me, like I put this on our Facebook group once and got like beat up because I said, hey, I need a hotel in Houston. And people are like, why aren't you staying in an Airbnb? Well, it's because when I'm on vacation with my family, yes, vacation rental all day long. But if I'm by myself and I don't have the kids, I don't want a kitchen. I don't want space. I want to get in a hotel bed and I want to be waited on. I want room service and just luxury when I don't have to, you know, when I'm not running a whole household. And so I think there's a lot of people out there and, you know, business travel, a lot of times you want to stay in the hotel that the conference is in. We made a big joke about this at the IMN conference a couple weeks ago. So do you see that being reflected in urban numbers or urban volume versus true vacation market volume?
Yeah. I mean, I think the asset's different, right? So when you think about the location, it's everything's very location specific. So it's hard for me. I'll generalize as best I can, right? Like that's one of the things we talk about. And I know we've spent some time talking about that too, is like, we focus very much on the asset versus just the market, right? Because most markets, you can find a good asset that can produce, right? And especially in vacation rental markets, if you know how to find it. But So I'll talk in general terms, even though I don't like to, because generalization and averages, again, in this space, I think is a mistake.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
If you think about in general and you're thinking about true urban markets, like I'll separate out places like Savannah and Charlotte and those things, because those are vacation / urban markets.
Yeah, like Scottsdale.
A ton of potential in those, a ton, on a single family home perspective with high capacity. But when you start getting into these larger places and markets, one, you have to worry about regulations. So that in and of itself can be problematic because, look at New York, right? And how they view short-term rentals. Hotels have a lot of lobbying power. So you have to worry about regulations. So if you set regulations aside too, right? And you look at some of these urban markets, it's really about footprint, right? And what the folks are looking for in the asset. I agree that hotels have a stronger hold, right, from the perspective of some of those travelers, but there's still demand for what I call 3-2s, right? The 3-2s of somebody wanting to go there with multiple parties or wanting to stay there with the family. Families still go to New York, right? Families still go to San Francisco. And so there's still opportunities in those markets. It's just different, right? And it can be more risky, because you really have to understand what assets you're getting. You have to understand the regulations. It's a little more complex. And I actually think you'll see more challenge and pressure in the future from hospitality-driven assets that are modified to create that same type of experience, because hotels are seeing what's happening, right, in the shift, and that the consumer's demand is changing. And so they're going to have to shift with it. So I do, from an investor perspective, we like the Charlottes and Savannahs, and we like the vacation destinations probably a little bit more, just because we think the risk is a little bit lower. So.
Yeah, I get you. And I've anecdotally, again, been taking my family to New York. We went to see Kiss's final show. We took our 3- and 5-year-old in December. And I was like, I have got to find a hotel, because there are no short terms, so that doesn't exist. And I'm like, man, I can't find a hotel room that has a door that will shut, because I want the kids to go to bed. They got to be separated. And it's really hard when you're just in one hotel room to try and get everybody to go to bed.
Yeah, and this points up another point that I always like to make, because it drives me crazy. So everybody talks about the saturation of the market, right? And they think about that in the terms of inventory, right? And the amount of inventory you have. What I like to think about is the upside. And when you look at the pricing, so you're looking at New York, and we should pick a different market because the short term is not wide. But if you go and stay in those two hotel rooms, right, that don't have a kitchen, that don't have a living room, that you're still like anxious because you have to shut the door and you're hoping that it locks and, right? The kids can still knock on it and you're still getting interrupted, right? And you're eating your dinner on the bed, right? How fun is that? Not very.
Yeah. Mess.
And you're going to pay more for that. That's what's wild to me. So if there was no more inventory growth or shrinkage or anything on either side, you could still put pressure on price, meaning there's still growth within the short-term rental space just on revenue, just on the price, because it's not equal to a hotel stay. And that means we're not currently pricing at what the consumer will pay. We're pricing off of each other. And that's pretty cool, because that's just upside. That's just opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree with that.
I mean, you price. I mean, I'm sure that you your price on some of your assets is greater than some of them that might even be next door to your current ones.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we've gotten, we're to the point now where we have hundreds and hundreds of reviews. So it's pretty clear, like, you're going to get a good experience just based on our reviews. So I think that's helped us a lot. The fact that we've been hosts for, 10 years old, but 10 years now. So, that really has made a difference for us.
Call you old. Let's call you explorers. You started it.
Explorers. Oh man. It does feel like now I'm like, back when we started, you had to walk uphill in the snow both ways.
That's right. Start saying back in the days pretty soon, Avery.
Yeah, back in the day. So, what have I not asked about Revity that you feel like it would be beneficial for our listeners to hear?
Yeah, I mean, I think the other thing is, we do provide the opportunity for us to take a second look. So we've built a process that allows you to order what we call a certified underwrite. So that means that we will review it. We also will look at the regulations for you, and that regulation's at the parcel level. So you'll actually get like, what is the regulations for that asset? Because again, everything we think about and how we think about this is at that asset level. And so you can actually upgrade, I don't like to call it upgrade, order a certified so that we'll actually do a second look at it and make sure that we believe in the number one and self-select comps for you, right? We'll select the comps for you too that we think are most appropriate and give you regulations. And with those regulations, like you get the costs, you get a link to the permit if it's a permit area, the whole thing. So those can be very beneficial for folks, especially when they're, you know, serious about buying an asset.
And I would like to highlight, and we might have to cut this out if you don't want to say it on air, but I would like to highlight the price of that, because for a company as experienced as you guys are with as big of brands as you guys are, I think that having, you know, a human at Revity look at and analyze a property is really valuable. And let's talk about how much that costs.
Yeah. So it's $249. That's it.
It's amazing.
So it's not very expensive. We've been able to manage that just because, I mean, we've underwritten $50 billion of assets. So we've built tools to help make us as efficient as possible when we do that and really give the underwriter, right, this trained underwriter, all he needs right in front of him so that he can make some of those decisions. It's interesting because that was the foundation for the tool that we're providing to the consumers as well.
Oh, okay.
Was what we built for underwriters. It's not, you know, they're not getting everything because it's more complicated and we had to simplify it for everybody else so that it was easier to use. But our underwriters have a bunch of information in front of them that allows them to move and understand pretty quickly. So.
Well, that's pretty amazing, because I think that, you know, a lot of the competing products like that to have a human analyze a property for you are extremely expensive, which a lot of investors
in some cases, yes.
Well, yeah. So it's like, but it gets to the point where if I'm a new investor and, you know, I've got my nest egg that I'm planning to invest, I might only be able to afford to have somebody analyze one or two. Whereas you guys, like, you have I think it puts a lot of pressure on an investor if it's like crazy expensive that, oh my gosh, I have to buy this one or I have to buy that one, or I'm out of money, I can't get any more analysis. So, and guys, by the way, I would like to just caveat this. You need to know how to analyze your own properties, but we don't have all the tools that these guys do. So you need to know, but
Avery, I mean, the way we talk about it is like, hey, we provide tools, right, that allow you to go do it yourself. And that's great for your initial run. But when you're getting serious and you're going to go buy even a $300,000 purchase, that's just a pretty damn big purchase. $250 against $300,000 is not that much. And so we highly encourage, when you're getting serious, like, that's what we want consumers to do. Again, we started this company to try and help this space get into this as an investment class. And that's where we're focused. We want people to make better decisions because we want this space to do well. The space overall does well. You do well. We do well. Like, everybody wins. It's a cool thing. This is a win-win world right now. So
yeah. Well, I'm so glad to hear your positivity about it, because so many people out there kind of bought into the Airbnb bust when really it's like you said, there were a lot of people getting involved back in 2021 that had no business being involved because they didn't treat it like a business.
The data shows that it's not a bust. I mean, that's what's cool. Yeah. And that's why I can say that, because again, I'm a data geek. So.
Well, all right, Colin, thank you so much for coming on. Guys, if you want to have a free trial of Revity, we have a link for you. It's revity.com/STS. As you know, or maybe you don't, I don't believe in affiliate codes or referral fees. So this is really just a discount for you guys. I don't get paid in any way by referring you guys out. I just think it's a cool product. I've enjoyed using it and want you guys to have the ability to try it out as well. And Colin, did we miss anything? Anything else we want to add?
Just how awesome STS is. So that's it. You guys are amazing. I think you guys have done some pioneering, which I think is awesome. So we're really proud to be able to partner with you guys. And I really, really, really like what you guys are doing. So yeah, it's good to have a partnership like that.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. Well, Colin, so we do have three questions that we ask every guest at the end of the show. Yep. I think you'll be just fine. All right. So First one is, what advice would you give 20-year-old Colin?
What advice would I give 20-year-old Colin? Learn how to be calm. I've had to try and learn that in my older age, and it's not a bad thing to learn.
All right. Great advice. What advice would you give this is number two. What advice would you give a new short-term rental investor who's looking to get started today? We're in almost Q3 of 2024 in the worst real estate market, I think, of all time. So what's your advice for somebody?
Buy now, but get help. That's to me, that's what it is. There's a lot of people, Avery, like the short-term rental shop, that can really help make better decisioning through the process. It's a complicated space. Mm-hmm. It is a great opportunity to buy right now. It really is. And people freak out about interest rates. I mean, I think when interest rates change, everybody's going to buy and house prices are going to go through the roof. So yeah. Buying now is a good idea. But I would recommend that you get help through that process, especially if you're just starting out. It's a complicated space and you can get a ton of value by getting help.
Totally agree with that. And last one, what's your favorite book that's impacted your mindset?
This is my favorite book. Oh, man, I hate this question. I've been asked it many times. It doesn't have to be related to anything else. One of my
somebody
favorite
said
books,
Harry Potter before, so you can say
Harry Potter. Okay. Yeah. Well, mine's worse than that. Mine's Treasure Island, because that was one of the books I read in junior high that I really enjoyed. So that's I love hunting for things, and maybe that was my foray into liking data. I don't know. Data's a hunt, like, in the space is a hunt, and I really like that. So,
All right. Well, Colin, thank you so much for coming on. And y'all look out. I'll put this everywhere on our Facebook group, Instagram, all that. But we're going to do a walkthrough on using this data on an example property for the YouTube channel sometime in the next few weeks. So keep an eye out for that.
Thank you, Avery. Always a pleasure.
Thanks, Colin. Thank you.